Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague, Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. Even though we spoke only recently, quite a lot has happened only since then. For one, under the surface of seemingly stable equity indices, we see a lot of investor rotation. What's more, an important Fed meeting taking place this week could set the tone for the second half of the year. Plus, the pattern between the price of oil and the U.S.-Iran conflict seems to follow your view, which you expressed during last week's conversation. So perhaps for this week, we can briefly touch on all of these points. Why don't we begin with the latest on the price of oil and the U.S.-Iran conflict? What have you been picking up on in recent days?
Sure, and of course, I'll do that with pleasure. Look, let me just repeat what I've said many times and I expressed it last week. I think a common mistake by investors is to predict the price of oil based on their views on the expected U.S.-Iran conflict. Actually, I think you should absolutely turn it around. You should use the price of oil to predict the trajectory of the conflict, not the other way around. But most people do it the other way around. So if I was a math teacher, which I'm not, I'd say the price of oil is the independent variable and the degree of shooting rockets is the dependent variable. That's what George Soros, the iconic global macro investor, once called the principle of reflexivity. It means that sometimes in markets can shape geopolitics much more than the other way around. And investors really need to deeply understand that. Since the beginning of this conflict, you know, when you think about it, spikes in oil prices regularly curtailed both the White House's or the IRGC's appetite for military escalation. That's because policymakers also react to domestic politics and to their constraints. And, you know, markets and money are very powerful constraints. For example, the White House clearly has a domestic political interest in cheap oil. And meanwhile, the IRGC also doesn't want to be blamed by its major trading partners like China, India, or others for a global energy and fertilizer shortage. So, you know, of course, there's much more to conflict than just markets and money. But I just felt it important to highlight that the price of oil sometimes impacts the Hormuz conflict more than the other way around, more than the conflict impacts the price of oil. And that's essentially why this conflict has not derailed our Roaring Twenties scenario, nor our global bull market scenario, to which we held on throughout all of this conflict and all of this year.
Now, Burkhard, meanwhile, U.S. inflation remains above target, driven by oil prices, the data center boom, and other factors. And the bond market was suggesting a Fed rate hike this week. That was not the base case of CIO. But, Burkhard, what do you make of the new Fed policy with the central bank now being led by Kevin Warsh?
Look, I believe that Kevin Warsh will collaborate very closely with Scott Bessent and the U.S. Treasury. And so, If you really think about that, I think it means that his focus is arguably much more on the 10-year yield than the short rate, because that's the cost of borrowing for the U.S. government. And that's probably true for U.S. President Trump as well. Now, considering the amazing strength of U.S. corporate earnings, they're growing, as we know, at above 25% annualized, the strength of the U.S. labor market, strong consumers, it seems to me that neither Wall Street nor Main Street needs a helping hand from the Fed these days. So that backdrop is a really good time for the Fed to, you know, sound hawkish, because it builds credibility. And even more importantly, it appeases the bond vigilante to keep the 10-year yield at bay, which really matters to the Treasury and the collaboration between the Treasury and the Fed. So my bottom line is that more hawkishness, not only by the Fed, but also in Europe and Japan, will be the tune we'll hear in the second half of the year. And that's to prevent long yields from driving up the cost of borrowing for governments or other big borrowers like hyperscalers, while the solid business momentum around the world can certainly afford it. So ironically, this time around, my view is a more hawkish policy tone can actually act as an anchor of stability for the global bull market and our Roaring Twenties scenario.
Well, Burkhard, that's good to hear. And yet the global stock market rotation we touched on last week, still very much on investors' minds. So where, in your view, Burkhard, is this rotation heading for now?
I think it's still going on. I think investors follow the money, which I think is quite normal because that's what they usually do. So just as the hyperscalers' cash flows are turning negative because of all of this CapEx spending, the recipients who are the ones who are really taking advantage. And that's not only the semis, you know, where there's been a bit of profit taking the last couple of days, but it's the energy and the utility stocks, the materials and the industrial companies, and even the S&P Transportation and Railroad Index just hit a new all-time high because they're shoveling and spending all the materials to build data centers wherever you see. And then, of course, all of this is bullish for financials because on the strength of their balance sheets, they're finally growing their loan books again. They earn juicy capital markets and investment banking fees, as we saw during the second quarter. And even retail banking has rarely been more profitable than it is right now. And, you know, while much of that is very well understood with regard to the big U.S. financial services sector, it's still an emerging powerful wave in Europe where banks have really been underdogs for long. And we like them a lot because they traded a big discount to their profitability. And growth is finally, we believe, returning with a vengeance here.
So in your view, the global rotation, which we've also covered here a few times, still going strong?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's still lifting, you know, many boats. Emerging markets, despite the recent profit-taking South Korea and Taiwan, they're still the best-performing markets in the world year to date. But anyone who's looking for undervalued growth opportunities, let me just pick this theme of European financials once again, because we like them a lot because they're cheap. And, you know, we're seeing real nice loan growth here. And, you know, it's structurally accelerated and it's not in the price, we think. Their balance sheets have rarely been stronger. Let me just give you a few numbers here to illustrate this. The European banks trade on average below book value at, you know, a single-digit PE, 9.9 times, and at a 30% discount to the overall market. Their return on equity has grown to the highest since the Great Financial Crisis. And, you know, their net interest income, which makes about three-quarters of their total revenues, is set to accelerate. That's just on the back of Europe's growing hunger for major capex investments, all of which is funded through bank borrowing. And that's coupled with record-high savings pool in Europe. And after 15 years of deleveraging, their asset quality is certainly not a problem anymore. In fact, they have the highest capital ratios at around 16% they've seen for long. I mentioned retail banking, Europe's biggest retail bank, which happens to be the world's biggest, boasts the cost-income ratio of around 36%. Let me just repeat that. That's a stunning cost-income ratio of just 36%. Meanwhile, these European banks and financials, they pay solid dividends. So yes, I think the global rotation theme remains intact. And this one example, you know, I think is offering even the value-conscious investors something like the steady eddies, you know, value-conscious investors always on the lookout for, which help you escape the noise of our time and, you know, allow you to own some sensibly priced, unassuming stocks, which mirror an important pillar to our Roaring Twenties scenario.
Well, Burkhard, thank you very much for dropping by the podcast today. Always great catching up with you, hearing your insights, and talking markets. So look forward, as always, to our next conversation. In the meantime, Burkhard, stay well. Speak again soon.
Thanks a lot. Likewise, stay well and looking forward to the next podcast we have. Thanks a lot. Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.